The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to the 9 till noon show for this Wednesday. It's the 17th of December. It's 4 minutes past nine and it's great to be with you. I hope you're all very well indeed. We have a very interesting show lined up for you. We are coming live today, I should mention, just at the top of the show, from the city of Derry Airport. And we've got Home for Christmas to build up to over the course of the next couple of hours. So you'll want to stay tuned for that. It's where we sprinkle that Highland Christmas magic to make Christmas very special. And this is a special one. You won't want to miss that. And, of course, you can watch all the proceedings unfold here, the show in general, and Home for Christmas by logging on to our YouTube channel, Highland Radio Ireland. You can watch that across your mobile devices, also on your smart TV or your Fire Stick. If you wish, you can watch us on Facebook. Just type in Highland Radio. We've a number of pages there, and we are also on the X platform. Now, we're inviting your calls and comments and requests, indeed, if you wish to send them in to us. The lines are open, as always. WhatsApps and texts to 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000, or if you wish to give us a call, it's 074 91 25000. And always, as always, if you wish to email, as many of you do, it's comments@highlandradio.com, and we get all your communications here to our outside broadcasting unit, just jammed in between, well, jammed, there's plenty of space, just located in between departures and arrivals in the city of Derry Airport. And listening to Lee talking a little earlier on, airports really are that place for many, whereby you're heading off on your hollybobs or you're waiting for people to arrive home. We're here for the latter. And as I say, that's part of Home for Christmas. We're going to be building up to that, and it is a wonderful story. Coming up in this hour, we had lots of you messaging in saying, did you hear what Senator Niall Blaney had said in relation to the defective concrete blocks issue? And we had, and Niall Blaney, in fair play to him, has made himself available for a chat this morning. Of course, he and another deputy from the county, albeit Niall's a senator, but Deputy Patrick O'Gallagher, both would have been in attendance for that parliamentary party meeting last night when the Jim Gavin fiasco report was being discussed. So we'll have the views of both in relation to that, but also we'll have a conversation, including Senator Niall Blaney and Deputy Charles Ward, on the defective concrete blocks issue. That's all coming up in the next hour. Right, so let's have a look at the newspapers and what's making the headlines on this Wednesday morning. We'll start with the, and I have to say the light isn't fantastic here, so I'm going to try my darndest. The Finn Valley Voice, we'll start with it, and this is an issue that we've been speaking about, and they continue the conversation in their paper today. The government is considering plans submitted by Transport Infrastructure Ireland to ban roadside memorials on major roads. The plans cite safety risks. Roadside memorials are a feature of the Finn Valley, especially along the main route to Donegal Town, where over 40 road users have died since the beginning of the millennium. Most are regularly visited or refreshed with flowers and articles belonging to the deceased. I've never seen that figure laid out like that as I have this morning. As someone who uses that road regularly, as many of you do, it's not that I wasn't aware of it, it's just when you see it quite literally in black and white, 40 road users have lost their lives since the start of this century on that road. Right, on to the Irish Times now, and all of the papers, of course, covering heavy the meeting last night, the Fianna Fáil party, parliamentary party meeting to discuss the Jim Gavin fiasco and the report there into. And Taoiseach Micheál Martin engaged in a dogged defence of his leadership at the Fianna Fáil parliamentary party last night amid renewed criticism from his TDs and the party's illustrious presidential, or disastrous, illustrious, that's a Freudian slip, isn't it? The disastrous presidential election campaign. The showdown with his critics in his own party came after publication of a long-delayed internal report into the presidential campaign, which saw the former Dublin football manager Jim Gavin who had been strongly backed by Mr. Martin to be the Fianna Fáil candidate, abandoned his campaign after it emerged he owed a former tenant more than €3,000. And really what came from that report, some of the key findings, is that Micheál Martin backed Jim Gavin off the back of a telephone call from a former Dublin footballer to Jack Chambers, suggesting that Jim Gavin would be a good candidate. Jack Chambers followed that up. Micheál Martin met with Jim Gavin once, just the once actually, and threw his full weight behind Jim Gavin off the back of that singular meeting. There are question marks then too about that process and the level of engagement with senior party members and what have you. We'll tease them out as this hour wears on. But really, the report from my reading of it effectively is saying this is down to Jim Gavin. You know, we asked him on a number of occasions. We asked him on a number of occasions if he knew about these allegations, and he said no until such time as he was actually challenged by a journalist, as it turns out, that owed him the money. And then he said yes. And at that point, Jack Chambers, Micheál Martin says the party could no longer back him, and then he pulled out. But anyway, we'll tease that out a little bit more with contributors over the course of this morning. Any views in relation to that? 086 60 25,000. We're not talking just about that, by the way, in case you're bored with it. Don't tune out. Revolut has been singled out for criticism over the way it treats customers who are victims of fraud. MEP Billy Kelleher, who had plenty to say at the parliamentary party meeting, by the way, but MEP Billy Kelleher told the fintech it needed to improve its response when it comes to consumer rights and protection against fraud. We spoke to one gentleman from Galway who was at €10,000 off the back of a Revolut fraud and was getting very little satisfaction in terms of a resolution. And then we were listening then to local people who were also having similar problems. Well, the Fianna Fáil politician, a member of the European Parliament's powerful Committee on Economic and Monetary Affairs, was commenting after another report in the media about an Irish Revolut customer being refused compensation following fraud on their account. The Irish Independent reported last week that businessman Paul Walsh, who we spoke to on this program prior, last week was left shocked after €10,000 was taken from his Revolut account without his authorization. And what was kind of concerning about that, it wasn't really clear at what point the fraud happened. That was the problem. You may have learned that €19 billion is being spent to improve the power grid in Ireland. What you may not have known is that you're going to foot the bill for the most part. It's in the Irish Daily Mail this morning. Households will shoulder the bulk of the €19 billion cost of an upgrade to the national power grid, with 16% of the population already struggling with electricity arrears. That's 16%. That's a high number, you know. Domestic electricity prices could rise by €21 a year, according to a Commission for Regulation of Utilities review. This comes as the regulator authorised an increased spending of an initial €13.8 billion by ESB Networks and Airgrid, the body that controls the electricity network. But is that fair? Because we can go to another newspaper, this time The Sun. Data centres. This is where the pressure is coming on the grid, you know. It'll probably come up in the article. I did glance over it. But they use over 20% of electricity generated in this country. And our emissions in terms of electricity generation, now part of it is because we import the lecky, but emissions over the last, since 2018 to now, have gone down in terms of the damage we do, in inverted commas, to generate electricity. At the same time, 88% of demand for electricity has come from data centers, and they now use in excess of 20%. So you could argue any spare capacity is being completely gobbled up by data centers. And is it fair then that we as consumers should as fellow consumers should have to then pay to enhance the network that the pressure has come upon from the data centers? Well, data centres should foot the bill to improve Ireland's electricity grid instead of customers, opposition parties say. The call came as households were hit with new monthly charges to pay for infrastructure upgrades Ireland's energy regulator yesterday, as I mentioned, announced the fees would be between €1 and €1.75 a month for the next 5 years. So this will pay for the upgrading of 300 kilometres of underground wires and 381 of overhead cables. Our infrastructure needs up here are going to be met by overground cables. They believe that that's the most efficient way to do it up here. On to the Irish Daily Mirror now, and a man who drove his person after person at a Liverpool Football Club parade while in a rage was jailed yesterday for 21 years and 6 months. And this trial really gave an insight into what could have been going through this person's head. It made no sense that he began driving into people and then continued to do so. And some of the descriptions of he had a dash cam, and some of the descriptions of what that dash cam picked up are really quite remarkable, that he continued to do what he continued to do. Well, sentencing him, Judge Judge Andrew Menari, QC or KC, said, Paul Doyle, it is almost impossible to comprehend how any right-thinking person could act as you did. The judge added, to drive a vehicle into crowds of pedestrians with such persistence and disregard for human life defies ordinary understanding. In total, 134 people were injured after Doyle, who's 54, ploughed his two-ton Ford Galaxy Titanium into the crowd celebrating Liverpool's Premier title victory in May. And I won't go into the language, but he knew what he was doing at the time, and he was quite coarse in his language, etc. Now, he'll serve, I think he was given 21 years, and he'll serve two-thirds of that before he's eligible for parole. And the BBC's in bother. Donald Trump, this is according to the Irish Daily Star, Donald Trump could be forced to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth if he goes ahead with his €10 billion euro BBC lawsuit, $10 billion, sorry. Lawyers for the broadcaster are said to be considering launching an aggressive defence. I don't know how they can, I don't know how aggressive the defence could be. They quite literally chopped up his words, in the run-up to an election to portray him saying something he literally didn't say. So I can't imagine how you might defend against that. But anyway, lawyers for the broadcasters are said to be considering launching that defense, and they could make the US president face questions about his actions during the Capitol riot of the 1st of January, January the 6th, 2021. Again, he's pretty insulated in relation to that. He never said anything to incite violence directly. So I say the BBC could be in bother if they're looking to think that bringing Donald Trump before the courts is in some way going to work in their favour. I'd be very surprised indeed. All right, if you want to comment on anything you heard there in the papers, 086 60 25,000, that's the WhatsApp and text text number. You can call us too on 074 91 25,000. We are broadcasting live from the city of Derry Airport. We are building up towards home for Christmas, and this is where we sprinkle the Highland Radio magic to make Christmas very special for a family. And this is a very special story, and as the morning wears on, we'll tell you more about that. But we will take a break, because joining me very shortly are Senator Niall Blaney and also Deputy Charles Ward, and we're going to be talking about the defective concrete block scheme and comments made about it by Senator Niall Blaney. That's coming up very shortly. And I want to say good morning to Senator Niall Blaney. Good morning, Niall.
Morning, Greg.
Good morning. Thank you very much for joining us. And we're joined also too by Deputy Charles Ward of the 100% Redress Party. Good morning, Charles. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning, Greg. Good morning to the listeners.
I have you both loud and clear. Right. Okay. So, Senator Blaney, I don't want to paraphrase incorrectly, so I'll just read some of the comments that seem to have peed off some listeners, and I presume Deputy Ward here. You said that in relation to the defective concrete blocks grant scheme, sometimes the spoof that is spun out of these houses is a little hard to take. If some of the spoofers had their way, there'd be a whole lot of people in Donegal sitting in crumbling homes and might even have fallen that might have even fallen on them at this stage. Thanks to the efforts and the work that has gone on thus far, there is real progress in Donegal, we can report. So just in fairness, whilst you're here, just sort of tease out those comments for me.
Yeah, well, I suppose I might take you back to the start of what I said, and that in context, Greg. I said maybe it's no harm that we have a refresh of the journey we've come. and you can check that that's what I started with. And I went over that journey. And I did talk about those within Leinster House, the spoofers. And I talk of that journey because the first time we went to put forward legislation and make changes to this legislation, there was those representatives on the opposition. Charles wasn't there at that stage. There was those representatives in the opposition that called us to scrap the scheme. And we took an awful lot of flak because it wouldn't scrap the scheme. And this is the main point of contention here. If we scrapped the scheme, nothing would be starting until now. And this is the big point about all this. Those that knew so much, but the reality is there was those in the opposition done a whole lot over the last number of years to wreck the scheme, but have actually done nothing for the people on the ground. And I talk specifically about the two Sinn Féin representatives, because they have talked an awful lot about the changes needed, etc. It has never been their party policy that they would address this, number one. Number two, they never ever tried to change legislation themselves. They could take in a private member's motion, one motion, a two-page, whatever they wanted to change, they could have changed it and they never done so. Mm. And there's a reason for that, because Sinn Féin have a different story south of the border compared to north of the border.
In relation to that, though, I mean, well, Sinn Féin aren't here to defend themselves. I'm sure they're well capable of it, though. Their proposal is a completely different scheme. Why would you amend the scheme when you're proposing something completely different? And secondly, you know,
Here's the point.
No, just let me say the second bit and then come back. And secondly, as well, too, you know, there was opportunities maybe where there could have been scrutiny of this bill, where opposition parties could have had their say, and that was, you know, the government circumnavigated that. So that could have been an opportunity that was taken from other politicians to have more of an impact on this scheme. Are any of those points in your view fair?
Well, the scrutiny on this part of legislation has been waived by the opposition. But what I say to you is this: there never has been a proposal in legislation by Sinn Féin. They have looked to put on amendments to our legislation, but they never ever had a proposal of their own. Why? They believe in this. And the reality of this is clear in Northern Ireland. And pirates and de facto concrete block issues. So was Tyrone, so was Fermanagh. And if they legislated in one jurisdiction, they're caught in the other. Mm-hmm. And that's the reality here, speaking out of both sides of their mouths.
Yep.
The same with the A5. They won't address the A5.
Okay, but I mean, obviously,
they won't open their mouth about it.
Yep.
And at the same time, we're losing out in the Northwest. I never heard Sinn Féin as quiet in all my life in the last 3 months on the A5.
Okay. That's disgraceful what's going on. Right. Oh, onto your comments in relation to you believing that good progress has been made. You know, and I'll bring Deputy Charles Ward in a moment because I'm sure he's got plenty to say. But in relation to the progress that has been made, what kind of progress is it? Of the 200, almost 300 houses, you know, that have been repaired, half of them have had external leaf or other remediation done, which is not really the full job. So if you actually look at the amount of houses that have been properly rebuilt, that being said, I don't know about the foundations, it is actually really quite small in the wider scale of things, Niall, in reality, though, isn't it?
That's only a very small picture of what's going on, Greg. There's 3,500 now have indicated in relation to taking part in the scheme. There's over 800 that have been given a grant allocation. There's over 500 houses in Donegal currently under construction. So that's a whole different picture to what you're just painting. And, you know, there's a job for us all now, Greg, to get behind this, because there are many new contractors in Donegal starting up, and many people now want to rebuild their houses. And there are lots of good stories, but there's something about it that we're afraid to let a good story out. There's people really, really happy in their skin that have got their house done. Now, I'm the first to say this scheme isn't what we wanted yet. There are still issues with it. And I pointed them out in the channel the last day as well, Greg.
Yeah, okay.
If you want to go over those.
Okay, we'll stay there and we can come back to that. Deputy Charles Ward's been waiting patiently there. We need to let the good news out, Charles Ward. There's an awful lot more going on than you might give the government credit for.
So over 3 years, there's been 121 homes built, right? And half of them, they were option ones. We don't know if they've removed the foundation. So out of them ones that were rebuilt, we don't know, will they have to be revisited and repaired in the future? That's option ones. If we're talking about options, outer leaf remediation, there's 92 on that. And what that tells you there is that these houses will have to be done again. And regarding the 3,000 applicants, well, I can safely tell you that I'm one of them 3,000, and I've been in the scheme since 2020, and I can't avail of it because of the engineering decision is the wrong decision for my house. This is my house here, Greg. That's the cracks on the wall. That's my child's bedroom. That's what I'm living with there. Every single day, and every one of us. And what Niall needs to remember is words are very important, and people look for hope. And people look to people who are elected to provide them with hope. And the time for calling spoofers and all this is gone. We need to get behind this. This scheme has failed on two occasions, and it will fail again. Pre-legislation scrutiny wasn't wavered by the opposition. I was on that committee. It was taken by a email vote that was anonymously taken, and I could not... And this is where it was unconstitutional. I could not find out the information of who took the vote. And what that done then was it basically it passed, pre-legislation scrutiny passed, and 43 homeowners were abandoned. And we're talking about language here, and it's very important to be accurate with the language here. You know what I mean? I'll give you an example. We have a survey done where... there's varying different levels of borrowings, okay? At the top end of it, we have five people currently that's on the scheme that are on the scheme that have borrowed 50,000. Sorry, 150,000. We have five that have borrowed 120. We have seven that borrowed 100. Now, the size of their houses are 2,100 square feet per, and upwards. So once you go past 2,100 square feet, you go beyond that into an ordinary rural house in Ireland, right? And the shortfalls are into the hundreds of thousands. The semi-detached homes are in to 60 to 80,000. There hasn't been one single person that have contacted us, and I'm on the ground everywhere, that have said that they're in their house and they're happy. They're in their house and they're glad to be in their house. But they're also in thousands of euros of debt, and the 8.5% retrospective payment that is actually coming to them is swallowed because that bill is waiting to be paid. That 8% has gone in a year, and in January for those going forward, Roadstone are putting up their prices by 8%. So we are so far behind with this, and you know I just feel like language is the most important thing. And you know, for example, if we're looking at the square footage rates. To rebuild a house down Donegal, the square footage rate is 2,580 square feet, depending on the size, all the way up to 2,880 square feet. Now, that means that you're at the top end of the scale, as in you've got a four-bedroom house, right, out in the countryside, and it's a good size of a house, a good family home. You're going to be short 150,000 to 200,000, depending on your finish.
Okay, well, let me bring Senator Blaney in directly on that, because I do want to talk about those that are potentially, having success on this scheme. But, I mean, Charles there laid out, pretty stark figures there. It can't be ignored. I presume you don't dispute them. So if you don't, what is your message to those people who can be up to 150,000 euros short replacing their house that is lost through no fault of their own?
Well, I don't know for those that they're charged to speak of, so I can't question what he's saying in relation to the people he's been talking to. All I can tell you is what I've been hearing from the people I've been talking to, Greg. I know houses up to 2,500 square foot that have been rebuilt at no cost to the homeowner. And from there down. And there's, I suppose, there's issues around all of this, Greg, and I suppose there's issues around costs and what some contractors are charging. And the variation in the pricing is something else. I did hear Charles saying in the dial the last night with block layers looking for up to €4 a block, and that could go up to €8. Like, some figures they got for me is nonsense because I know plenty of block layers that are working for €2 a block. I know contractors that are pricing a lot less than others. So there's a whole lot of issues around that.
Are you saying there's gouging, Niall? Are you saying there's gouging going on amongst some contractors?
There is. There's definitely gouging going on. Absolutely, there is. But I think competition and time will sort that. Because as time has evolved, there's more and more people now actually becoming builders and developers. So the more competition we have, the better pricing there will be.
Niall, just in relation to the houses that you know, 2,500 square feet being built with no penalty whatsoever, right? If you're going to that number, but are you of the view and would you be campaigning that someone in a larger house, 3,000 square metres or whatever it might be, should be able to rebuild their house at no additional cost to themselves? Like, are you campaigning for that yourself directly?
Yeah, so the last... The piece that you're taking this morning when I addressed the minister last week, this is one of the points I made with him, because I pointed out a number of issues that are still outstanding, and this is one of them, where you go over that 2,500. For instance, Greg, say you had a house 3,500, and you're having to downsize to come inside the grant and to afford it, but you're still paying a mortgage for 3,500. That's still an anomaly with the scheme, and I've asked them to go back and look at it again. I have no indication that that will change in the short term. And I won't leave people up the garden path.
So, Deputy Charles, what do you relate to?
The other point is external walls and garages, boundary walls and garages are not in the scheme either. And again, I've asked, and I've been constantly asked the Minister to re-examine where it's all at. So the same issues as with the house.
So Deputy Charles Ward, you can comment in whichever way you want, but what more can the likes of Senator Niall Blaney do? Do you think he's within the party, he's got decent access, and he's arguing for much of the same that you're arguing for? So, I mean, really, are we not to some extent on the same page?
Darragh O'Brien delivered for his constituents in the apartments, that group in the apartments, he delivered for them. Up here, because we're geographically isolated, we've been given a grant scheme. The pyrite in Dublin and North Leinster was sorted, but the pyrite in Mayo, they're the same as us. They're given a grant scheme. They're given the same shortfalls. So, and we're talking about builders up to €8. I was saying, and let me explain that point, because it was taken out of context there. What I was saying to you is this: if this continues, €4 a block is what they're charging. And I have seen it countless times. I was a block player. I know how to build a block. I'm on the ground. I know what they're charging. I know what contractors are charging now, because contractors are like hen's teeth. There's not enough of them. But the issue is with the rate of building coming right now, the scheme will not do 700 houses a year for the next 15 years, what it needs to do to deliver it. We are hundreds of years off this. That's why this scheme will fail again. This is why we need to go end to end, like I've been saying in the first place. It's about walls and garages and stuff like this. Let's talk about the community centre that are currently affected, the doctor surgeries that are currently affected. You know what I mean? This is coming towards us. And I am there waving this flag, telling you all, if you don't get on it and you don't sort it out, you're going to have an absolute humanitarian crisis compared to what we've got right now as the tip of the iceberg, what's coming down the line. And that's why we need to get this done. It needs to go end to end. It needs to stop being politicised. It needs to realise that we've got a humanitarian crisis. We've got defective materials in Donegal. The House of Minister's own constituency, I was down there, less than 2 miles from his office, there is a pyrite issue amongst the houses down there. Geographically isolated, it's the same problem, but it's there.
Well, one thing just in relation to contractors, I do know of one family and there was one quote of 220 and another quote of 400. So there is massive discrepancy amongst contractors. But is the truth not, just to try and move us forward, though, even in an end-to-end scheme situation, Charles, is it not the case, though, that given the scale of of this. We could be talking 28,000 houses and God knows how many other buildings. This is going to be a multi-year, and people like yourself, who you, I can see behind you, your kids' rooms in bits, right? Clearly, let's get you through it. But there are other people, like our own house, for an example, that probably is going to be fine for 5 or 10 years. You know, with even with the best will in the world and the best scheme in the world, there is going to be a queue.
Yeah, but let me explain that to you there, right? So the way we're doing it right now, a builder will take on 10 houses and he's a certain amount of line credit that he can have, but he'll still go into the providers and not be able to get the best buying or bargaining power. But if we have a government-led scheme where the government has to build certain amount of houses and certain amounts of this, then you get major contractors come in, even if it's subletted out within, you will save the state money, and you will have a scheme then that's end to end, that's basically like they've done in Leinster.
So it would be seen as one single major infrastructural development.
Yes.
But Niall,
one single.
Yeah. Sorry, Niall Blaney, Senator Niall Blaney. Sorry. Are you in favour of an end to end scheme? Is that your? Is that? I mean, you know how much money's in this country in Ireland. You know, really, if it was the government's will that we could have an end to end fully funded scheme, you know, that 1 month's corporation tax windfall we had last month would do 28,000 houses, right? So the money's there. And if we had the will, we wouldn't even be having conversations like this now. Would you like to see an end-to-end scheme? Do you think the government can look at some of those resources and say, look, let's invest these in the people, and why not Donegal this time?
I think the idea looks good in paper, Gray, but when you get down to a rally on the ground, the majority of the houses are rural houses. Every house a different design to people's own needs. If you were to go with a standard house and give everybody a standard house, that there would work. And we take the Dublin pay rate in context. The issue there was all on the subfloor. It was not replacing blockwork. It was replacing subfloors in something like two estates. And the practical thing to do was to get one developer and do the whole thing. So, you know, everybody wants their own design of house. And I can't see practically how what Charge is proposing could work on the ground, because the council couldn't go on every individual house.
No, but what I'm trying to get at from you is, right, because you know, I mean, you do shoot from the hip at times. What I want to do is actually your view, right? You're within Fianna Fáil. You're not afraid to criticise Fianna Fáil. We've seen that with your comments in relation to the leadership. What I'm saying to you is in truth, right, you would like the government, would you not? And I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, to do more, to go end-to-end, or to find whatever system it's required to make sure all of your friends and neighbours and family get the houses back that they deserve. I mean, you don't oppose that, do you?
I don't oppose it, but let's be practical about it. I don't think it's practically possible, Greg. You couldn't implement it on the ground because, number one, the council wouldn't have anywhere near the resources to handle every case. You're talking about handling every case individually over design and everything else, and then a different contract for every house. There's no way a civil service would manage that.
Do you know where they're managing it though? They're managing it in the rural and vacant properties. They're doing a fantastic job in relation to that. They are managing hundreds upon hundreds of individual people, separate contractors. They're doing it right now in a scheme that's designed to work simply. Why can't we just do that for these people?
There's thousands of manpower out there working that now, Greg.
No, of course, it's brilliant. It's fantastic. But what my point is...
This is the quickest way of doing it.
The council is doing precisely what you says they couldn't do, some would argue. Listen, Charles Ward, I do need to move on, but I want to give you an opportunity to come back to Senator Niall Blaney in relation to that.
Look, listen, this has been thrust upon the local authority, okay? So you take it, as you were saying, as one massive project, and that project is defective concrete rebuild, right? That's what you call it, okay? And in this defective concrete rebuild, you come forward with a certain amount of plans for houses that are stage ready to go. You get a company in to manage this in place of the local authority. Now, there is a number of large contractors in Donegal, in Ireland, that would be salivating at the cost of getting their hands on this scheme, that have the buying power, that have the capacity to do it and deliver. What we're doing right now is we have the ordinary builder out there with no buying power or ability or no proper credit lines, where there is a scheme that could work.
But I'll say the same to you, Charles, as I did to Niall Blaney. If you take that scheme I used as an example, if it's a simple scheme where you feel you'd get the money and you could get stage payments, but it's a simple scheme, people can actually potentially manage it themselves, because we're seeing it happening in, as I say, hundreds and thousands of people. So maybe it's just that the your ask is too far, and maybe somewhere in between can actually get us things moving. I agree also, I could understand from Senator Niall Blaney's perspective that there are people in new homes now, and there is good news out there as well. But obviously, Niall, and you know the game, right? It's the same in the hospital. 85% of people have very positive experiences, but you know, it doesn't mean that you can't sort of platform those that do not. But I think we all have that understanding.
Absolutely great. But I'll say this much. You know, that 85% do talk about the positive experience in the hospital. If we don't, but people have their say with the good news, you know, it doesn't inspire confidence.
And we do, just in case, and I'm not being defensive, because you're not having to go, but we do that. Deputy Charles Ward, listen, thank you so much for joining us. I really do appreciate it. Look after yourself.
Good, Greg, thank you.
Okay, Niall, do you have 2 minutes? I know you're busy this morning. The parliamentary party meeting last night, you were pretty vocal at it. Micheál Martin, the papers are saying he's survived, right? But, I mean, there's different sort of interpretations of that. I think you said pretty directly that now we need, did you, sorry, I don't want to misquote you, you need a change of leadership at this point. The time has come.
Yeah, well, I suppose I said a number of things. I went back to 2011. I took a journey, Micheál's tenure as leader. And I talked about and when he looked to become leader, he said he was going to save 40 seats. We came back to 19. I talked about how under his leadership there's been an awful lot of interfering with elections and picking a favourite candidate. That's been undermining the parliamentary party and candidates and individuals. And I said that policy direction wasn't where I would like it. And I spoke as spokesperson over the last 6.5 years, I've constantly asked for a debate in the parliamentary party in relation to Northern Ireland, and it has never been granted. And I said that was a sad day for Fianna Fáil heading into its 100th year as a Republican party, that we can't discuss Northern Ireland. And as from that perspective, we're not much different now than we were in 2011 at 17%. And I said, the only way I feel we can get back all those colleagues that lost out, they're still around in 2011, that were just thrown to the wolves. The only way I feel we can reunite Fianna Fáil and bring it back to somewhere beyond 20% where it belongs is with a new leader, a new direction.
Do you see an obvious new leader there now?
Well, I see numerous obvious leaders there, and I see a competition if and when that arises. And I suppose last night wasn't about the leadership per se, it was about the report and questions in relation to the report. And that meeting went on for over 5 hours last night.
Yeah.
And there was
now, obviously, we've got some people very vocal in their views, like yourself. There are those then who are quietly disgruntled, and also even maybe some of those that you might have expected to come out swinging for Micheál Martin aren't quite doing so yet, at least. Do you believe that the writing on is on the wall, that perhaps he's just been in the job too long? This is a crisis he can't come back from, and the party needs reinvigorating. What do you think the sense is amongst the parliamentary party about the future leadership of Micheál Martin in the short term, but even maybe even talking about into the next general election?
Well, I'll take it in cohorts. The cohort that's been around a while mainly are of a strong opinion that we need new leadership, that the defence here is incredible. How colleagues were treated in relation to the whole approach to the presidential or lack of process, Greg. The way some of our former colleagues were treated was absolutely disgraceful. And the defence now isn't credible. And then you have the younger cohort who haven't seen a heat before. And I suppose they're looking over their shoulder and wondering kind of what to do. This is the first time they face that. And at the same time, a lot of very good, credible new young people. So some of them are sitting back and kind of waiting to see what's going to happen or where it goes next. And I suppose we're into the Christmas, heading into Christmas week, Greg. There won't be very much happening on the side of Christmas, but
okay,
no doubt we'll return in New Year to it.
All right, listen, thank you very much for that, Niall. I really do appreciate it. Look after yourself.
You too.
Right, we'll be back with more on the 9 till noon show after we take this break. Joined at our broadcasting base here by Andrew Fleming, who's a past president of Derry Chamber of Commerce and CEO of FNW Group. Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning. Lovely to be here.
Thank you so much for joining us. How important is the having been, of course, at the helm, the likes of the Derry Chamber of Commerce, and I suppose, too, its sort of relationship with chambers and councils around it?
Well, I think what we've tried to do over the last number of months and years is reflect what happens in day-to-day life in terms of the economy here in the Northwest, which is how it's such a cross-border working relationship that we all have. And my own business is based in Donegal and St. Johnson, but with lots of business across into the north, and we all know that from a education, from a day-to-day life, and from a business point of view, we just live and work across the border. So what have we tried to do? We've tried to build relationship as closely as we can with Letterkenny Chamber, help with the relationships between Derry and Strabane Council and Donegal Councils, as well as all the other institutions that make our lives go round.
In terms of the North West City Region project, right, how close do you think we are to it delivering the type of results that it surely has the potential to do so? We're a region far removed from Belfast and Dublin, a lot of commonality there, a lot going on, so much to offer.
Yeah, you've hit the nail on the head in terms of some of those words. Promising has been a word we've always used a lot. Are we closer to delivery? I'd like to think we are. We're certainly moving into delivery phase with so many initiatives and activity promised to be delivered over the next 2 or 3 years. We're surely moving into a phase where we're starting to deliver on the promise. If we look at the TNT projects in Donegal, the expansion of the university here in Derry, as well as the City Deal projects, which should bring so much regeneration to the cities and to the economic development of the place. There's and from being have the privileged position of being in the room for a lot of the discussions between the councils and the major stakeholders and in governments in both Stormont and in Dublin, it very much feels that momentum is with us, that we're moving into a truly transformational era for the region.
And where do you think the growth will be in if we get the connectivity that we want? You mean, it seems we might be in a very good position, for instance, to be the leading out in terms of, you know, renewable energies, for an example. I know there is an awful lot of stuff going on here in that regard as well, but do you think we need a hook, really, to sort of push the region on, whether it's that or something else?
And I think that's still something we're not struggling with. We're almost spoiled for choice in terms of what that hook is, and so zeroing in on what that might be. But certainly energy and the renewables feels like something that we have an abundance of, like essentially with our wind energy that comes off the Atlantic, certainly in this northwest corner of the world. It's the equivalent of having an oil field that's just underutilized. But so having that ability to transform that into an energy to drive our economy is what's required, and certainly all in terms of the energy sector, like the growing narrative around that is to bring industry to where the energy is, as opposed to try and transport the energy to the rest of the island. So
yeah, and that's why infrastructure is so important. And it's not just, say, for instance, the infrastructure of roads. It's electricity connectivity and so on. And that's why as a unit we have to keep... Because when we talk about renewables, by the way, someone might listen and think, oh, you're talking about windmills everywhere. No, this is about the construction, the development, the maintenance of new technology. If you look at solar, solar is really impressive figures in the last couple of years in terms of addressing. FNW listeners very familiar with Fleming Doors, Fleming Coatings, Fleming Steel, right? Part of a big company based, you know, obviously headquartered in Donegal, but right across the north.
Yeah,
that's going well for you.
Yeah, I suppose I should take the opportunity to apologise to your listeners for the ad that.
Well, don't take it away because we've become we've become so blooming used to it now, right?
It's part of it. Yes, it's been incredibly successful, but thanks to Highland Radio for giving us that giving us that platform. It's certainly given us a name out there. Yeah, like we're a very old established. I'm fifth generation, so 1860 we were formed in St. Johnson, and we had some difficulties after the economic crash, but in the last few years things have gone well, and we've been able to acquire and build a business across the north here, and we're an ambitious group. We're kind of a 165 year old startup at this stage with the FNW Group.
So 165 year overnight success.
Yes, exactly. It's been an interesting journey, certainly. Over the decades, but we're excited for the future in line with what I think is an exciting time for the Northwest City region.
And I presume having come through not just one recession, right, many, there's a resilience builds up for that, and you can use that to your advantage too, to ride things out when things are tough, but to make hay when the sun's out.
Well, that's it exactly. It's playing the long game in that regard, and we think we've learned a lot over the years, learned from some mistakes, but also learned how to spread your risk and to and that's certainly what we're doing a little bit, but we're feeling very bullish about the future at the moment, and I'm excited for the people that work with us to be part of that that whole adventure.
All right. Well, I think you're part of a journey onward to Belfast. So, Fleming will let you go then. So, to quote the advert, Andrew Fleming, past president of Derry Chamber of Commerce and CEO of FNW Group. Thanks so much for dropping into us.
Thanks so much.
It's been lovely having you in. Okay, we'll be back with more after the news and the obituary notices live here from City of Derry Airport.